Good evening. I'm Jessica Markey, welcoming you to this live event. I'd like to thank everyone for taking time this evening to join us. Tonight, Senator Art Haywood of the 4th Senate District will take your calls and questions about advanced planning preparation. Senator Haywood will be joined by Melina Dixon, a staff attorney at Legal Aid of Southeastern Pennsylvania. As a reminder, if you have a question and would like to join the conversation, please press star 3 on your keypad to participate. Again, that's star 3 to submit a question or comment to tonight's discussion with the senator and his guest. And now, without any further delay, let me welcome State Senator Art Haywood.
Thank you, Jessica. Good evening, everyone. This is State Senator Art Haywood. Welcome to this telephone town hall for all my friends and neighbors in the 4th Senate District. I'd like to thank everyone who's taking time out of their busy schedules to participate on tonight's call. Whether you ask a question or just prefer to listen to the conversation, I appreciate your engagement. If you'd like to ask a question at any time during tonight's discussion, press star 3 on your phone. As Jessica said, tonight we will spend the next hour or so helping you prepare your estate in a legal and ethical way. Living wills, advanced directives, powers of attorney for health care, making your wishes known. We hope to address as many questions as you have in the next hour or so on these topics. Now, to help me on this discussion, I'd like to welcome my very special guest, staff attorney from Legal Aid in Southeastern Pennsylvania, Ms. Melina Dixon Esquire. Melina Dixon Esquire, so glad you can join us tonight. Welcome, Ms. Dixon.
Thank you so much for that introduction, Senator Haywood. My name is Melina Dixon. I work at Legal Aid of Southeastern Pennsylvania in Norristown. And we'll be talking about some topics that a lot of people tend to avoid. But I hope that this is a helpful conversation for everybody involved. And that this really helps you to understand what these documents are about. And first, I just do want to say that this is not legal advice for your personal reliance, but we're giving general legal information and education. So if you have really, really specific questions, I definitely suggest you speak to an attorney privately, but we're going to give some very general information tonight.
Great. Thank you so much. Now, as Jessica mentioned earlier, tonight we'll be taking questions from you on how to be prepared for the inevitable. So let's begin. I do want to share, Ms. Dixon, that at one time I was a staff attorney at Community Legal Services, and I really appreciate all those legal services lawyers for the commitment to people who really can't afford an attorney without your assistance. I really want to thank you for your work. Now, Jessica, do we have some callers?
Yes, it looks like we have a lot of people calling in. We will start with Claire. Claire, you're live with the senator.
Hi. Thank you, Senator, for doing this.
Good evening. Thanks for joining. What's your question?
Recently, my brother died without a will. He was a single man with no children, and he lived in a personal care home. After he died, the personal care home told us we were not allowed to get the information of what happened the day he died because we were not a part of his, he didn't have a will, he had no estate, we were not administrators to the state, so therefore we are not entitled to find out what happened to him that day. So it was very, that was new to us. I was on my brother's HIPAA form, so I thought I could get his medical information of what happened the day he died. So I was wondering, why is that against the law for a personal care home to give a relative that information?
Yes,
did they say
it? It sounds outrageous to me. But I, go ahead, Ms. Dixon.
Did they say specifically that it was against the law or that they were not allowed to provide that information?
They, I wish I had the actual number of the law in front of me. They gave me the number of the statute in the law of Pennsylvania that says, no, you are not entitled to that unless you are the administrator of his estate, of which there was no administrator.
What do you think, Ms. Dixon? Is this a need for a new legislation, or has, do we have a mistaken or do we have a mistaken interpretation from this organization?
There are some instances where places may have specific policies, so that may be what it is. Without looking at the specific documents or the law that was used in that instance, I can't say specifically what it was, but have you since been able to get that information or?
And so I'm not really asking for advice because our lawyer's helping us, but first of all, it's very expensive, obviously, to hire a lawyer. But secondly, I would just suggest anyone who has a situation like this, you better make sure you have the person's estate set up properly so that you can get this information when he died very unexpectedly and suddenly. So, and he had no spouse, no children, and they qualified to get the information. So it's just something I don't think, I mean, you live and learn the hard way sometimes, and so this is a tough lesson for us. And so people need to be very clear on setting up their estates.
Yeah. So, let me say this. I'm going to definitely check into the laws in Pennsylvania that this company may be relying upon. But, Ms. Dixon, what is a document that would protect Claire or folks who's in Claire's situation so that they would be, so they have the authority to receive the information that she had sought but was denied?
Yes. Typically, what you would want to have is what's called a healthcare power of attorney. Sometimes people call that an advanced directive as well. But you would want to get that document, get it filled out so that there is what's called an agent in place so that there's a specific person who has the authority to get any medical information on behalf of someone else or make decisions in terms of their medical care. And that document should ideally be done as soon as possible for anybody. You don't have to be advanced in age or needing nursing care for that. But if you get that document done, it's signed and witnessed, then that document can be presented to doctors or other medical staff in advance of anything so that people know who to contact with any medical decisions or who can be contacted with changes to anything regarding their medical care.
Now, let me ask a question. So does the advance directive deal with what happens after the person has passed? Does it deal with who can make medical decisions while the person is alive but maybe incapacitated?
Yes, it does. So when it comes to afterlife, so after somebody passes, we'll typically look for a person in charge of the estate, and that would be the person who would be in charge of any claims or any just kind of shoring up anything that's left in the estate, anything that has to do with any nursing care, any finances, any estate property, anything like that.
Okay. So the advance directive deals with decisions while the person is alive, And then what's the document that deals with the situation with a person's past? Is that the will, or what is it? What's the document that deals with these kind of decisions after the person's passed?
Yes, that would be the will. Sometimes it's considered the last will and testament. But yes, the will is the document that can help to appoint somebody who is in charge of the estate after a person has passed. And the estate is just what we call any remaining property, finances, any possessions that a person has in their own possession once they pass.
Okay. So going back to Claire's situation, so if Claire was, if the deceased, the person who passed away, had a will, and they made Claire in charge, then would Claire then be able to get this information she was seeking about the causes of death?
She should be able to, yes.
Okay. Now, I thought the causes of death were put on the death certificate. So I wonder why she couldn't get the cause of death from the death certificate. But, Claire, we're going to follow up with you to get more information. You raised a really perplexing situation that's creating a lot of anguish where you can't find out the cause of death of a loved one. That really seems problematic. But let's go through some calls.
Great. Next we have Maria from the Mount Airy. Maria, you're live?
Yes.
Yep.
Hello.
Go ahead, Maria. Hi, Maria. Go ahead.
Hi. Oh, I wanted to ask you about, geez, I forgot what inheritance tax. Yeah, I had asked you about inheritance tax. I'm asking for my children when I pass. Is there any way that can be avoided? And exactly what is you have to pay taxes on? The furnishing.
Okay. Yeah, how much is it and how does it work? Yeah, those are good questions. What do you think, Ms. Simpson?
The inheritance tax depends on how large the estate is, and a lot of times that information is available in your local county office. And if you're in Mount Airy, then I think the Register of Will should have that information. But it really depends on how big the individual estate is and what property would be being passed through the estate. So, for example, are there residential or commercial properties that are being passed through? Is there a lot of personal furniture, wealth? Like, what it would really depend on what is in the estate that's being transferred to look at how large the estate would be. And then based on how large the estate is, there's a tax based on that. Does that answer the question?
I think it does. The more you have, the more you got to pay. Sounds like
so,
that's the basic formula. The more
long story short, I can't give specifics on that.
Understood. So maybe someone could find, before our call is over, a phone number that Maria could call in order to find out how much she may have to pay. Not she, but the estate of the person who passed may have to pay. We may have to follow up with Maria on that. But that's a good question. Someone's passed away now. Let me ask you this. Whose money is it or property that has to pay? Is it like the next of kin, or does it come from what the person left behind? Who's got to pay the bills?
Typically, the money for any taxes comes out of the estate itself. If the estate does not have enough to cover any taxes or any shoring up, then things in the estate can be sold off, but that's more of an individual process. When it comes to the estate itself and the taxes, most of that comes from the estate itself.
Now, that's extremely helpful. I think there's a question maybe out there. What is the estate?
The estate consists of whatever is left in a person's possession when they pass. So if I own any cars, if I own a home, if I own any personal property, anything that I have left that I have ownership of when I pass, that would be what my estate consists of. And so my personal representative or administrator is the person who would be in charge of handling my estate and everything that would be left in my ownership when I pass.
Okay. So it's everything you had before you pass, and then the question is who gets it? Is that pretty much it?
That's the major question.
Okay. Let's go with some more callers.
Great. Next we have Kay from Mount Airy. Kay, you're live.
Good afternoon. I was just wondering, I think I got my question answered with the first question, but being an only child and not having any family, I was just curious, is there really anything that I really need to do as far as have something filled out? Because I could get a will, but if you don't have anyone to really leave it to, it's like basically, what am I filling out for? Is it even necessary? I mean, I know it's necessary, but again, if you don't have any family, any children, any parents, anybody to really leave like my home to, what am I filling out?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you so much, Kay. What do you think, Ms. Dixon?
Yes, that is a great question. And so my response to that, I hate to answer a question with a question, but the first thing that I typically say is if anybody does not know specifically who they would give things to, the best thing to do is to make a decision. Because if there is no decision that's made, then it becomes somebody else's choice. So even if you don't have any specific family members, it can personal property or anything else, the choice can be made to send it to friends, to charities, to anything like that. But when you say you don't have family members, is that immediate family? Did you want to give any more information about that, or is it just that you don't know who you would give things to?
No, it's just no family, no blood relatives. I have plenty of friends. I have plenty of good friends that I know. I've even asked, you know, a young lady, she's young with children. And I asked her, you know, like if I moved or if something happened, would you like to take my house? I would love to give it to her. I would love to give it to someone who needed it. But, yes, I don't have any, you know, bloodline relatives here in Philadelphia. My family was from the South. All of them have passed. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I know something needs to be made. A decision does need to be made. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, pretty much what exactly should I be filling out for. And, yes, if I decided, well, one of my good friends, you should have this if something happens to me. But when you don't have any family, I'm just trying to figure out which type of paperwork or something. But, right, a decision does need to be made.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So you could get all of that. You can get the same documentation as anybody else. And I would say more so in your case, it's probably even more, there's probably even more of a reason to get it because, and for a lot of people, what they don't know is that there is a default plan, if you will. If you have certain people that are still available in your family, for instance, if you have a spouse or if you have children, those people would be the default people that would get property if you don't necessarily have a will. But if you don't have those default people, then it becomes a lot more difficult to figure out what's going to happen with your property. Or it gets a lot more difficult for the law to figure out what's going to happen with your property. Or you can just do what I would suggest a lot of people do and make the decisions for yourself and not leave it up to the law. Because when you make the decisions for yourself, you choose what's going to happen with your stuff. I mean, yes, the law is in place so that if we don't make decisions, there's something else to go with, but we don't necessarily have to rely on that default plan. So that's what I would suggest. And you can get a will. That would be the document for after you pass. The healthcare directive, that is the document that helps with making decisions, medical decisions, when you're unable to do so. And then there's also the financial power of attorney, which if you wanted to, you could have somebody to make decisions on your behalf financially. So there's a few different documents that do exist. You could have all of them or none of them, but it just depends on what decisions you would like to be made. And I would say if you are in a situation where you don't necessarily have specific people who would be able or available to take, then I would say a will is definitely something that you should have.
Thank you, Kay. Thank you, Ms. Dixon. And it could be, you could give the property to a charity, a school you attended, fraternity, sorority, church, any organization. So the will is a way to get your property to somebody or organization, you know, whether they're a relative or not a relative. The United Negro College Fund, you know, amongst many other, American Heart Association, they'll all be glad to get what you have, and the will will be a way to make sure they get it at the time after you pass. All right, who's the next caller?
It looks like next we have Joan from Mount Airy. Joan, you're live.
You got a lot of Mount Airy people calling. Go ahead, Joan.
Good evening. My question was, if I were to initiate a power of attorney for health, does that require me to be liable in case of the person's death for financial responsibility for health care?
Okay, let me ask a quick question. Make sure I'm in the same place. The person who you're making decisions for, that's not you, that's somebody else, right? You're talking about when you take over the decisions for somebody else. Is that the deal?
Yes.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure. Go ahead, Ms. Simpson.
Thank you for that clarification. So I'm just going to introduce just a little bit of terminology for us here. The person who is the one who makes decisions for someone else, that would be our agent. So if you want to think of like sports or something like that, this is the agent. This is the person who is making the decisions. And the person who wants the document and wants somebody to make decisions on their behalf, that's the principal. Just like a principal of a school, that is our principal. So we have our principal and we have our agent. And so I think the question that that's being asked is if the agent would have any financial responsibility for anything that the principal is requesting, and that would be no. So the agent is not responsible to cover expenses for the principal. So if, for example, I had if one of my parents had a medical power of attorney and I was their agent, I would not be responsible to pay any of their medical expenses. Now, if insurance wasn't covering certain things and I had decisions to make about whether I wanted to help, that would be up to me, but I would not be on the line financially for those things. Does that answer the question?
The agent.
You are the agent.
What's happening is my insurance company is asking me to fill out a power of attorney for my husband, who mm-hmm. is the principal,
mm-hmm.
the way you explained it. So mm-hmm. I do mm-hmm. have this power of attorney for medical, am I also responsible for the bills that the insurance company does not pay? Say, for instance, in his death, there's property involved. What happens mm-hmm. to the property? If I sign as the power of attorney, then while he's living, does that automatically make me liable to all my property, liable for his medical expenses? I want to know why they're asking for a power of attorney when he's covered under the insurance anyway.
Are they asking for someone to make medical decisions on his behalf?
So I have permission to do that as his wife. But he's covered
what?
Under the insurance. He's covered under the same insurance plan. It's my employer. But he's covered as a family member under the insurance plan. But because I'm speaking for him, they want to make sure I have power of attorney to make the decisions for him. But I want to know where does that power of attorney stop as far as becoming responsibly financially for his bills.
Okay.
And because there's property involved.
So there is not a responsibility under the power there is not a responsibility under the medical power of attorney in order to financially cover anyone. That's not part of it. The document itself says that the principal is giving or is designating responsibility to their agent to make medical decisions. And this is the document that legally makes it so. So that might be what the hospital is requesting so that it's put out legally and it says explicitly this is what I want. There are in some cases defaults where if there is absolutely no one else and someone has to make a decision, then they might choose someone. But if they want to do things legally and if they want everything to be clear ahead of time, then they'll request that this document be filled out.
Let me ask you something else. I got a follow-up question. So Joan is saying the insurance company is asking her to fill out this document. She said she doesn't think she has to do it because she's the spouse. Does the spouse have an automatic right to make these health care decisions?
Not necessarily. It's more of a default situation. It's more of a default situation. So if they don't have this, then they'll default to the spouse. But if they do have this, then they'll know that the spouse is the first one to go to.
So if you have a spouse, is it better to get one of these advanced directives or healthcare power of attorney? Is that the best thing to do so that to put a spouse in a position to make a health care decision when the loved one can't make a decision on their own?
Yes. And I will back that up and say the document that we're discussing, it has more information in it than just this is the person who makes decisions on my behalf. So it will say, this is the person who makes decisions on my behalf, and these are the types of decisions that I want this person to make. And so it's a document that has a lot of information in there, but it's about medical decision making.
All right. That's helpful. Now, there is a wrinkle I heard there. So, one, Joan, just because you're the spouse, these power of attorneys can still be clarifying. So the insurance company may want you to get it just so it's clear about who can make decisions. And Ms. Dixon has been very clear. You're not responsible for any financial obligations because you signed that form. Now, it did occur to me, though, Ms. Dixon, that Joan and her spouse may have some joint property.
Yes.
House, car, and that could create some responsibility for paying if they from the house or something. What if they own some joint property, a house, a car, something like that? They own that together. There's not enough money to pay the hospital bills or the insurance. It's all been exhausted. Can a hospital or somebody else come against the house that the husband and wife own together?
There is a possibility, but what I do want to clarify is that it would not happen as a result of the medical power of attorney or healthcare directive. That would happen as a result of the insurance policy, the bill, and the nature of being someone's spouse.
Okay, that is helpful. How are we doing? Do we have a bunch of callers?
We do. We have several questions. So before we continue, I do want to mention to folks that if we are not able to get to your question tonight, please remain on the line after we hang up, and you'll be able to leave a message for the senator, and his office can listen to those messages after this call and follow up with any questions you may have. But we will keep going because we do have several questions. Next, we will go to Devin in Elkins Park. Devin, you're live?
Yes, it's Devon.
Oh, Devon.
My question is, that's quite all right. I'm used to it. You've been getting it for 63 years. I'm used to it. And good evening, everyone. My question is, I don't have children. I've never been married. My insurance, I have insurance. I have my plot and everything paid for, and I also made my own personal arrangements with the funeral home. I do have sisters and brothers, but do I need a will in order for my sisters and brothers to just divide the property and whatever I had left over amongst my sisters and brothers?
That's a great question.
It is.
How many sisters and brothers do you have?
It's 11 of us.
Oh, wow.
11, okay. All right.
Yes, I come from a big family.
That's good. That's all fine. Mm-hmm. 11 siblings, what do you think?
Yes. So I will say that in any case, when anybody asks, do I absolutely need a will, the answer is no. However, would I suggest getting one? Yes. And that is because in any situation where it's not clear, it gives opportunity for there to be a dispute. So if there's anything that you can clarify beforehand and say, I want this to happen or I want this to happen, I would suggest doing that. Or even just making one person an administrator and allowing that person to make decisions. That is, in my opinion, that would be a better way to go about it than to just, for lack of better words, make it a free-for-all and say, all right, you guys have whatever you want to have. Because otherwise, where there is an opportunity for there to be a dispute, there can be a dispute. And I have seen, if people want to, they can fight over a fork. So if there's any way to make it clear what you would like to go to whom or who you would like to administer the estate and allow that person to make all of the decisions, that's fine. I just wouldn't want to make room for disputes.
That's really helpful. Now, what do you think about her siblings getting 1/11th of a piece of real estate?
For the residential property that's involved?
Yeah. If there's no will, then everybody, if they all get 1/11th, what happens after that? 1/11th, I mean, that means you need 10 other people to agree before anything can happen?
Yes, but in those cases, if a property wants to be split amongst that many people because it's normally very difficult to get people to agree, properties are typically sold. And again, that's the typical thing. That does not necessarily mean that's what's going to happen in every single case. But with a property specifically, I always try to tell people to make sure that you have a person that you want that to go to, because if there's ever a property involved, that can definitely be a place of contention for a lot of people. So I would say definitely have a specific person for that to go to, or a specific person who makes the decision, one of the two, because having multiple people who it goes to and having to require all of those people to be on the same page can be very challenging. So if you want it to go to a sibling or a niece or nephew, that would be fine, but it's better to make that decision rather than to have a family have to make that decision after someone passes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm really glad you're on this call. Let's keep going.
Yep. Next, we're going to go to Bernice in Mount Airy. Bernice, you're live.
Hello, everyone. My question is, a trust versus a will, how did you determine which is the better option?
That is a very good question. And it really, for trust versus wills, it depends on what type of property you want to go into the document. In most cases, most types of property can go into a will, and it with trusts, there are some different rules that apply. So it depends on the type of property that you want to go into either document, and also there's different rules that apply to each. The easiest document to create is a will. Trust can be formed in a lot of different ways. Trust can be formed through wills. Trust can be formed in their own documents. And trust can be formed orally in some cases. But it really depends on what type of property you're leaving, who you want to leave it to, and if you want to put any stipulations on that. So one example that I'll say is that if you're trying to leave property to people under 18, for example, the best way to do that would be through a trust, because you don't necessarily want a minor to get property, and also in a lot of cases they're not going to be able to get property. So if that property is held in trust for that person, then they'll be able to get it at a specific age instead of just being through the will, and it's supposed to go to that one specific person. If they're under 18, then you don't necessarily want them to have it, and the law might not let them have it. So specifically for people who are under 18 or might be very young, I would say the best instrument to hand off property would be the trust. But generally, a will can encompass a lot of the transfers that people want to make. And also, while I'm mentioning transfers, there are other things that don't necessarily have to go into a will or a trust. So I will just quickly say that bank accounts, for example, most banks have what's called either a transfer on death or a payable on death beneficiary. So if you contact your bank, then they might be able to update that information for you. So that's something that you don't necessarily have to put into a will. I know that was a lot of information, but I hope that answered the question.
Yeah, let's slow that down. Paid on death. So let's say, tell us more about how paid on death works with a checking account or something like that.
Yes. So, transfer on death or payable on death, those are T-O-D or T, as in Paul, O-D. It really, so different banks will label it differently, but basically all you're doing is labeling that this is the person that I want anything left in my checking or savings account to transfer to. And that way, the information does not have to be listed into a will. It's just an automatic transfer. And you can think about it as a life insurance policy, for example, where a life insurance policy just transfers to another person. These POD or T, like Tom, OD accounts, not accounts, these POD or TOD beneficiaries, everything just transfers directly to a person.
Now, I know you answered this question, but I want to be crystal clear.
Sure.
A separate paid on death account, can that person get the money while I'm alive?
Say that one more time.
Sure. A separate paid on death account, I got some money in the account, I write checks on the account, but the person who I said is the paid on death beneficiary, can they get any of the money while I am alive?
They should not be able to. It may depend on an individual bank whether they would allow that, but in most cases, they would not be able to. Now, if you have what's called a financial power of attorney, they might be able to do that and then some.
Okay. But based on paid on death, they should not be able to get any of the money because that's what this is all about. When I die, you get the money, but when I'm alive, I get the money.
Exactly, yes.
This is a fantastic call. Howard, we got some more callers. We're running down. We've got our last 2 minutes or so, it looks like.
Yep. We have several callers. So, again, I'll repeat. For those that are not able to get their question answered tonight, please stay on the line, and you can leave a voicemail that will be sent to the senator and his staff, and they'll be able to listen to it and follow up. Next, we have Dorothy from North Philly. Dorothy, you're live.
Yes. I have a sister that I had to put in a nursing home. She's been in there almost a year now. Can you hear me?
Yes, keep going. Thank you. Yes.
And anyways, before she went in the nursing home, I was taking care of her at home. So one day she said to me she wanted my name to be put on her house. So I went down to City Hall and had my name put on her house. But by her being in the nursing home, I just want to know, if anything happens to her, like say if she passes away, do the nursing home have a right to take her house, you know, with my name on it?
Is the house still in her name as well?
It's her house, but she is paid for, but she wanted my name to be put on her house.
Is it your name only or both of y'all's name on it?
Both of our names are on the house.
Okay.
Okay. So in that case, they would not have rights to the entire property. However, they may request, so if at this point in time, she has ownership of half of that property. So that is considered part of her estate. So if they look at the whole and say, okay, well, she still has this amount left, and this amount would cover whatever her insurance didn't cover. So if she has expenses that exceed what her insurance covers and she is unable to pay for what's left in her medical expense, then they may try to lay a claim on that, but they would not have rights to the entire property because you are a joint owner.
But would they have a right to have?
Not necessarily a right, but they may have a claim to it if she is unable to pay for the entirety of her expenses through her insurance and her her own personal funding. So they may request remittance of payment if she has more available in her estate to cover that.
Okay, so there's some risk for Dorothy.
A small risk, but yes.
All right. Now, is there much activity from this Medicaid or DHS forcing people to sell homes? Do you see that much?
I wouldn't say that I see forcing people to sell homes, because with Medicaid specifically, they have what's called the 5-year look back. So if you're qualifying for Medicaid benefits or anything like that, or trying to qualify for Medicaid benefits, selling off a bunch of property would not necessarily make it so that you are able to qualify, because they'll look at what was sold, how much it was sold for, and if it was sold for fair market value. And we might all know this, but just in case anybody doesn't, Medicaid, of course, is the state-funded healthcare, but there's more issues that people run into by trying to sell off or get rid of property in order to qualify for Medicaid. So I would not say that people try to get rid of property or sell it in order to qualify for Medicaid.
Great advice. All right, let's keep going. A few more calls before we wrap it up.
Okay, next we will go to Marjorie in Abington. Marjorie, you're live with the Senator. Ms. Dixon?
Hi, Senator. Thank you so much for doing this, and you too, Ms. Dixon. I did the modern thing, and I asked ChatGPT to recommend some online or free will templates, and the top one was called Rocket Lawyer. Do you have any familiarity with that, and what do you feel about do your own online wills?
I do not have familiarity with Rocket Lawyer, but the only thing that I will say about online templates is that if you're trying to prepare a will, it's a good idea to talk to a person. And the reason I say that is because not every single thing works for every single person. So in some cases, I'll talk to people who they have young children, so I might want to put a trust in there. Or if I'm talking to some people, they have a lot of property, so they might need more services than someone else. But at the end of the day, I cater the document to the person. I can't say that an online template does that. And I'm not just saying that because, you know, I'm an attorney, I have a degree, all this stuff. But it's just when it comes to these kinds of documents, if you don't have a whole lot, then maybe Rocket Lawyer could be helpful. I don't necessarily recommend it because there are things that may not be done properly, and also I don't know how their execution process is. And when I say execution process, all of these documents need to be executed in person. They need to be signed by the testator or testatrix. That's the person who is getting the document, so they need to be signed by that person in the presence of two witnesses and notarized. So if Rocket Lawyer allows for all of that and explains it clearly so that it can be done, that's great, but there's certain criteria that has to go into these documents, so I get a little antsy about making sure that all of that is taken care of the way it should be.
Wow, that makes sense, especially if these documents are for the entire nation, because we got 50 states to have 50 different rules.
Yes.
Let's try to get in one more caller. Can we get one more caller, Jessica?
Yeah, of course. We will end with Annette from Mount Airy. Annette, you're live.
Hi, good evening, and thank you very much for this. My question is back to the estate planning, if you will. Is it better for me to transfer my home to my son prior to me passing or not?
Great question.
Mm-hmm.
Great question.
So I would say the best and sometimes easiest thing, if you don't have anything to be concerned about, is if you can, transfer everything now. So if you don't have, for instance, because I've talked to different people and suggested this, but if you don't have different things for your taxes, for example, if you're not getting like a tax discount, because I had a client once who was getting a discount on her taxes because the house was in her name. So if you're not getting, and she was over a certain age. So if you're not getting that kind of a discount, or if you don't absolutely need the property to be in your name for any specific reason, then yes, transfer it now. Because when it's transferred now, you don't have the issues of anything going through probate later.
Now, we'll say one thing on that. Well, I strongly agree with Ms. Dixon. Now, once you transfer it, you got a new owner.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely don't want to be in a position where the new owner puts you out of your own house. So you got to make sure you got a good relationship with the new owner so they don't do something tricky on you. But you say it's your son, you should be in good shape. Let me say this. This has been a fantastic conversation. Ms. Dixon,
I
am the administrator of two estates, and I am a trustee in a trust. And what you have shared today has helped me. Yeah, I'm the last resort. So what you have said has been extremely helpful. I can't help you. I can't thank you enough. This has been a great discussion. And again, I'd like to thank all of our guests. I'd like to thank Claire and Malia and Kay and Joan and Devon and Bernice, Dorothy, Marjorie and Annette. Thank you all for calling in. And for all those who didn't get a chance to ask a question, thank you for listening in. It has been shared. If you didn't get a chance to ask a question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we will get back to you. If you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office at 215-242-8171. You can visit my website at SenatorHaywood.com. Ms. Dixon, thank you so much. Jessica, thank you so much. And thank you for all who participated. We're going to have you on soon.
Yes, thank you so much, Senator, and thank you, Ms. Dixon. Thank you for all our guests and speakers tonight, and I hope everyone has a great night.